You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Andy Liu, we are recording the night before Election Day.
Wow. And by my full government name. Just unreal. On the night before. And you know what it is the night before of? The most important day of my life, Sam. Your birthday.
Thank you. So if you guys are listening to this, obviously I hope you voted or you're going to vote. But hopefully we can give you an hour of distraction from what I anticipate to be a very emotional, long process before we find out the result.
Do you think it's Jameson or Hennessy or wine or what are you drinking? All three? Actually, you might go all three. I've seen you do all three at once.
No comment. With that said, we are less than 2 weeks from the draft, Andy. We are actually, no, I take that back. We're 2 weeks and 2 days and a day from the draft.
2 weeks a day from the draft. That's why we bring someone that's actually smart on the podcast to finally give us some analysis. No, I am excited, by the way, because Seth Parnell, I used to write and like we did like some video stuff way back. Do you remember those days? Ah, now look at you. Now you've ran the Bucks.
Live.
Yeah, yeah.
We have just to clear that up. Seth Parnell from The Athletic. Seth, how you doing?
Dude, all right. Bourbon. Is the answer. So that's where we're going tomorrow.
That would be my go-to as well. Hopefully celebratory, but you never, anyway, that we're going to avoid that for the next hour. We all need an hour distraction. We've spent a year discussing the Warriors' potential machinations in their post gap year. And we're going to spend another hour doing that. So, I wanted to start with this, Seth. So we threw out a question to our Discord chat. You know, we said, Seth's coming on the pod. Anyone have questions? Come on. And the first thing we got from the premium Discord chat was from Tommy Gunn. He says, tell Seth, putting Harden above Steph is offensive in any context. Doesn't matter if Steph hasn't played in 10 years. Still offensive.
Okay.
So I'm gonna start right here. You did your player tiers project, and I don't want to call it an article because it was a series of articles. I mean, was it five or six total?
It was five. Okay. Five articles, 31,000 words. If people didn't have the stamina enough to read all of it.
Yeah, geez.
Well, I read all of it. I just didn't know how many it was in total. But in that thing, I mean, I thought it was well done. I encourage everyone who hasn't read it to go ahead and read it. And I didn't actually think it was unfair, but at one point, when we get to the end, which was the tier one players, you had 1B, which was Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, and 1A, which was James Harden, Giannis, LeBron, and
Kawhi.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to scan to it. Yeah. So I guess the question here is, I kind of assume that's just an injury risk thing, right?
Yeah, it's. I mean, KD obviously is. It didn't matter where I put him; it was a giant shoulder shrug. And I'm not breaking news here. I've said this other places. Is part of the reason I put him there is I wanted to. I knew I was going to spend a long time talking about KD, so I wanted that to be at the start of an article rather than at the end of one. So that kind of made more sense to put him kind of first person I talked about in tier one rather than last in tier two. But like, who knows? Nobody knows. Steph is like, okay, I'm 80% certain Steph is that guy after, you know, being hurt last year. He's not young. He hasn't really been called upon to be like the all the time, every night main guy in 4 years. Now, do I think that's still there? Yeah. But is that like 20% enough of a doubt just to, as of right now, coming off, as you said, as everyone says, the gap year? Yeah, I don't think that's unfair. Like, if you're like Steph at the peak of his powers versus James Harden at the peak of his powers, who would I prefer? In almost all circumstances, I'd prefer Steph. It's just because we haven't seen the peak of those powers in, you know, a good little bit. You know, there's just enough prove it to me to, you know, now, push it down a slot.
Now, Seth, you're a data person.
Yeah.
Now, the last time we saw Steph Curry and James Harden, the last time we saw Steph Curry, he was pretty much playing James Harden. But it was only two games, right? It was maybe even like a game and a half, which I guess most Warriors fans would say Steph was a better player in that series to close him out. Is that enough, though, there to say that, you know, because I think part of it is maybe you can rely on in the regular season, James Harden. But is there enough there in those couple games where you can say, yeah, I'd rather have that guy now? Or is this kind of ranking more where you can rely on James Harden more across, you know, 82 or 72 or 55, however many games we're going to get this season?
I mean, again, it's not intended as a ranking. I mean, there's kind of a the tiers are so that there's a band of players that you could, you know, make reasonably close arguments for all of them. And really, once you get to the very top, it's, is this guy good enough to be like the driving force in a championship team? And, you know, people say, well, Harden hasn't done it. Giannis hasn't done it. Like that Rockets team that the Warriors beat in 7 2 years ago was a championship level team. Like there's no, I don't think that there's any,
it was all Chris Paul.
Yeah. Okay. no, but, and, you know, that, so, and it just happened to, you know, have some unfortunate, you know, both injury luck, some bad shooting, and run up against like one of the like most kind of absurd collections of talent, you know, of this or any other era. But in a normal basketball year, that team was plenty good. I mean, the team took the Warriors to 7 games. I mean, it was plenty good enough to win a title. And that's because of James Harden. So, like that's kind of the only argument I need, I feel like.
Yeah. So you don't mention it explicitly in your article, but I kind of got the assumption your concern with Steph is honestly the same concern I have, which is it's not that I don't think he can be as good as anyone on any given night. It's I have some concerns over durability at this point. Like, can he physically do it every night? Last year, like, I mean, it was a freak hand injury, but, you know, if you want to take it farther back, it's a freak ankle injury. It's a freak hamstring injury. There's a series of, like, Steph's fatal flaw is he isn't the most durable guy among, you know, that tier of, like, top 5 to 7 players that we always talk about. I want to take this in a different direction. Going forward to next year, as you're looking at the Warriors, which is kind of, it's, you know, we know who their core is, but we also don't really know what their roster is going to be like after man five. What would you be looking to do around that team to, I guess, I don't want to say protect staff, but like there has to be some onus. There has to be some consideration for the fact he's 32. He'll turn 33 before the playoffs next year. And, you know, wanting to surround him with a bunch of guys where his, where you're asking him to be, you know, peak 2016 Steph every night. It's kind of just, it's probably not the safest recipe to keep him healthy.
Yeah, no, and I think that that does get back to a little bit what we were talking about is, you know, he's been a little bit, I don't want to say protected, but, you know, you have Kevin Durant next to you. So some nights you can say, yeah, okay, you do your thing, KD. And the difference is having to be, having to play like the Dame Lillard role, basically, where it's got to be you every night or you lose. That hasn't been seen basically since early in the 2016 playoffs, really. But to answer your, to the question you actually asked rather than the one I wanted to answer. The Warriors, just in terms of their roster, they need, you know, for as good as they are, as good as they look like they should be at the top end, they need a little bit of everything.
Right.
They could use another creator. They could use a big wing or two. They could probably use a minutes eating kind of, a middle reliever basically of a center.
Right.
So
shout out Zaza.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's you feel good about like the top three or four, and then you getting into the playoffs against as deep a talent, a collection of talent as we've seen in the league in a long time, you know, you kind of run out of guys. And not even just against like the Lakers and Clippers, but even against, you know, a team like the Nuggets, who will probably go seven or eight deep with guys who are playoff capable. And who are those other guys in the Warriors? They are sort of TBD and yet to be added.
Also, I'm going to go backwards a little bit here with the Steph because that's my guy. So I'm going to keep it on brand for a little bit.
I'm not ripping on you.
No. So here's my thing, James. I think a lot of this is based on what I think guys like Giannis and guys like Harden have kind of been exposed. And even if you're looking at Kawhi Leonard, who really doesn't even play regular season games, I think if Steph Curry was on the Kawhi Leonard plan, he'd probably be even better than he is in the regular season. The Kawhi Leonard plan is a joke. Not even to say his leadership is a joke. And then you talk about the Giannis stuff where it looks great in the regular season. And then with the same thing with James Harden, who also doesn't play defense. So, you know, you kind of can't get hurt if you're never moving laterally on defense. So it's pretty good life. So I think the stuff with Steph Curry there too is he's that good offensively to where I think it matters a little bit more versus someone like Giannis, who's great on both sides, but then you get to the postseason and we start to see some of the issues. But also with Giannis, I think it's probably Budenholzer. And then to me, it's like someone with Steph, it's like, well, maybe it's Steve Kerr that he doesn't carry as much of it. Guess what I'm trying to say is there's, I think...
Yeah, which direction are we going here?
Something you could say about every single player, maybe outside of LeBron, mm-hmm. in the top tier.
Yeah.
And if I think all those guys were healthy, I think I'd probably have them all up there. Even Harden, even Giannis. I think the injury thing is probably more for KD than Steph to me.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. But it is a little bit what Sam was talking about, just the night to night, just ramping back up from, you know, last time he did it, he was 28. Now he's 30. He's going to be 32 this year. You think he can, but there's just enough doubt there.
HGH, I think, will solve it.
No, but you raise a really
cycling.
Good, yeah. Yeah. But you raise kind of a really good point, and I think I touched on this in the article, is there's more players in the league who are capable of, with the right team, being that guy than actually can be. You think about it, like 45% of finals teams, LeBron has been their best player in the last decade.
Yeah.
So there's not a lot of spots left for someone to be the best player on a finals team. And there are more guys who are good enough than just will get that chance just because, you know, whether it's, you know, the wrong players around them, the wrong coach, bad luck, running into the wrong playoff matchups, what have you. I mean, it's I think, you know, in general, I want to be as exclusive as possible at the top, but you do have to acknowledge that, you know, you're being good enough and actually doing it, aren't quite the same thing.
We got to see it again, and I don't think we've watched the Warriors play for about a decade. So I think that's pretty accurate.
This has been a very long year,
very long. Seth, we're going to ask you the same questions, but we need a new perspective because me and Sam talk about it all the time. But I also we've argued this point many times too. How much do the Warriors actually need? Because you're saying yes, they do need everything, but.
Said a little Steph bit, Clay, a little bit of everything, which
a little
is
bit of everything.
Yeah. Positive perspective, in my opinion. Yeah,
right. Steph, Clay, Draymond, Wiggins. I'm throwing Wiggins in there because it's an ongoing
because he's going to be
Warriors
there.
Joke. Because well, maybe unless they want to save money. Say they're all there. That's not that in itself in a mediocre surrounding cast. I think is good enough to be a contender when you look across the league. That we've seen in the bubble. I don't think I saw a team that was that great. Even the Lakers that won it, I don't think they were some juggernaut. Like, I don't think they were some 65 win regular season, like crazy juggernaut playoff team. So they do need a little bit of everything, but I don't know how much more that they need. Like, I don't think they need like Ben Simmons or like some crazy thing. Like, I don't think they need some like above average wing. I kind of think if they find relatively average bench players, I think they'll be fine to contend.
Well, so, I mean, just throw out a name of like the level of player you're thinking about, because it's not like, you know, not, Rudy it's not Gay. Adding. Yeah. Rudy Gay, like, you know, but it's not adding Alec Burks and Glenn Robinson the third. It's
even Glenn Robinson, I think would be semi average.
Yeah. But you're aiming a little higher than that. Are you Royce?
I hope we're aiming a little higher.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I hope so. But the problem is it might not happen. So I think that's where the concern is. I think Warriors fans are like, well, let's get Josh Richardson for a future second in the TPE. And I'm like, yeah, it'd be great. But why would Daryl Morey do that? Maybe, maybe not. What if it doesn't happen? But I'm saying like, maybe if you pick up a Glenn Robinson, like that might be good enough there to get you, or even a Rudy Gay or an Aaron Baines.
I guess to give my perspective, I'm looking at it from this standpoint. They need to figure out who that fifth player in their closing lineup is going to be.
Smiley.
It's not going to be Smiley. Yes, next 2022, Smiley.
Yeah.
He's going to be the next Dirk. Anyway, other than that, I do kind of agree with Andy. They can probably cobble together depth because Steve Kerr's a great coach and he can generally get the most out of guys. And you kind of hope for some internal development there. But my big question is like, okay, so they like to call it the core four. We mock that a little bit, but anyway you slice it, Wiggins on his contract is closing games.
Probably.
Yeah. I mean, and I don't see a scenario where Wiggins is on the roster and they've somehow gotten two players who are so good that he's on the bench.
I think Wiggins has a chance to actually be like, he's never in a million years living up to that contract.
Of course.
But I think he, in like the Harrison Barnes role,
sure,
he's got a chance to be pretty good. With a good solid starter, that if he was making $12 million a year, people, like yeah, nice pickup for the Warriors. It's just
Josh Richardson money, yeah.
Yeah, he's making 30. So it's like,
well, we think he's better than Harry B offensively, not as good defensively. Do you have like any takes on Andrew Wiggins as a player and maybe how good he can be?
I think I might actually reverse that. I think that the problem with Wiggins is the stuff he's good at, he's not good enough at to actually do on a good team. There's some stuff he has shown in flashes, like cutting. He's not a terrible spot up shooter, but he's not good. It's just him ISOing with the ball in his hands it's going to be a lot of mid-range jumpers.
We're assuming he's going to ISO less next
just year. Like KD.
Yeah. But cutting, offensive rebounding, spotting up, he's got some ability there. I think that the interesting thing about his time with the Warriors was, switched into a different role, and it's a tiny sample size, obviously, right. Was kind of, operationalizing some of kind of the athletic gifts he has on the defensive end. He was, I think he was just short of being, you know, in his short time there of being 2% steal, 2% blocks. And that's a very kind of select club of kind of very interesting players, especially when you kind of, you remove like the Andre Drummonds and the big guys who happen to pick up steals.
All right, you're going deep into the statistical weeds here. So I have to ask, like, who are wing players who get that level of steal block rate? I mean,
it's like Robert Covington is basically the first name you think of in that area.
Okay.
Now he's not that. And by the way, Robert Covington is the exact player that they should want.
Right.
Oh, don't worry. Don't worry. Kerr doesn't want him. Don't worry. It won't happen.
Not a good enough passer.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah, he doesn't do the he doesn't back cut enough, like actually.
Yeah, but he would be, I mean, that would be like, as far as a closing lineup goes, that's
so he does kind of fit that small ball four perfectly.
Yeah. That's kind of a name that's come up already for you guys.
Warriors fans, they would be nothing happier. Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the guy who did it as a rookie last year was Matisse Thybul, who, you know, whatever you say about his offensive game is obviously like a very handsy, impactful defender. That's going to be an interesting piece for the Sixers for years. I don't remember off the top of my head. So, Jimmy Butler has been there in the past. I don't think he quite got there last year. So those kind of not necessarily that level of player, but those kind of impacts is kind of what you start to get into.
Okay. I mean, that's all promising, and that does fit kind of Warrior fans got really excited watching him defend the 12 games before the COVID shutdown. And it did kind of match what you always thought he could be, which is when he's engaged, he can be disruptive on defense. And you kind of, you know, if you're painting a best case scenario for the Warriors, you have Draymond yelling at him, you have Steve Kerr, you have kind of a situation where the stakes are high enough that he does, like, no one's going to be okay with him taking quarters off defensively, which he would do in Minnesota, or weeks off if you really want to be into it. So, like, I don't know. There, I guess he's promising. I guess my question is, would you rather the Warriors prioritize like getting a big man to finally close out that group, or try to, you know, kind of recreate what worked for them in the past, which was find that ideal, you know, bigger wing to give them that small ball unit that switches everything, that kind of made them famous with Draymond at center and all that stuff going forward. This kind of ties into what you wrote in your tier project when you got to the Draymond section, which I can't remember exactly where you put him, but you kind of alluded to the fact that, like, when he's at his best, he's still one of the most impactful defenders, but, you know, questions about long-term, how long he can do it physically.
Yeah. So I think from a, you know, looking especially towards next year, I think if one was talking about using assets to acquire someone, whether it's the draft pick or something else, I think you're looking more in the wing area, because I think there are enough, like, you know, Aaron Baines could be available for an exception or something like that. And there's enough kind of like maybe Derek Favors wants a ring and can will come for, you know, an exception or something like that. There's enough kind of competent big men who are getting squeezed by the way the game is moving that
right.
you can get someone who's an innings eater to play that position. And, you know, not necessarily someone who has to close, maybe in certain matchups will close. But I think that if you're looking at your standard closing lineup, you're probably looking at a smaller player.
That's the thing. That's where I think the Harrison Barnes comp is a little tough too, because Harry B at the four, you know, it could
work. He's best at the four, period.
Right. So. The problem is Wiggins at the three, and you can't put him at the four. And then you've got Draymond at the four, who's useless now offensively. Then that becomes kind of like, all right, then is it Kevon Looney, like a defensive mind? And I think that's the point you're trying to make. It could be anyone. It could be just whoever matches up best, because they might not find that guy who's just going to be the constant closer. It might be Looney. It might be – I keep saying Rudy Gay. Why do I keep saying Rudy Gay today, Sam? Like some weeks I just keep saying Rudy Gay.
I got a name for you who I think would be a tough get for them, but Jeremy Grant.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. No, actually he fits perfect sphere of a guy who's probably like a natural four. But can switch everything. I mean, that would be perfect, yeah. Like, without getting into the star, like, Siakam, Giannis.
I am really excited to see Wiggins and Jeremy Grant get nonstop open threes and just never know what's going to happen. Well, is it going to swish?
We watched that for, like, half a decade with Iguodala and Draymond. It's kind of how it goes.
Just run it back. Just keep doing it.
It's where you hope whoever ends up with Jeremy Grant, you hope that his bubble. Well, I'm shooting. I'm good at this now. I'm shooting. Like he's actually made them the last couple of years. Just for most of basically until the bubble this year, he has been a guy who is not always just I'm shooting, and that's so much more important than I feel like we talked about this back in the day on Clipper Blog Live. Actually, was like the Matt Barnes phenomenon, right? He shot 40% from three, but just wouldn't shoot. And so it kind of didn't matter like what he shot. But you need a willing shooter who can also defend. Maybe
that's the problem. That's
like everyone around Stephen Clay. Steve Kerr, who's kind of always preaching, move the ball because, he wants to maximize the amount of shots that his best shooters get, that you end up with a situation where marginal shooters end up a little shook, not wanting to take the shot.
Yeah, and that's never great. That's the kind of thing you run into that when you run into that situation in the playoffs. Guys sort of play their way off the floor, and then all of a sudden, what was a very deep team becomes a very thin team.
Yep.
Like your 7th through 10th guys don't want to shoot, and now you can't play them.
Are you talking about the Bucks? Or are you talking about what was that? Did I hear Bucks? Did I hear Bucks? Oh no! Oh, okay.
I don't know where you're getting that from.
Oh, got it. That's kind of the real shooter problem that we've had. I think it's because I'm always a little bit jealous of the Houston Rockets, where it's like Mike D'Antoni can just get guys to shoot. Like all of a sudden, Daniel House is shooting, right? Like he's making shots. Covington, he's streaky, he's making shots. They got all kinds of guys, and then the playoff comes around.
PJ Tucker becomes the greatest corner 3-point shooter of all time.
Yeah, and then the playoffs come around, and now maybe they would have won if it wasn't the Warriors, but it's. Man, it's a lot harder to shoot in a playoff setting when now you actually have to make it instead of I'll just shoot 10 of them and if I make three, I'm okay. So real shooters versus fake shooters.
Yeah. How many would Lou Dort have had to make for the Rockets to actually guard him in the first round? It's that, like, that was the clearest demonstration of keep shooting. I don't care. I can remember seeing of a guy, but to his credit, he kept shooting them and made enough of them that it was interesting.
We hope that Andrew Wiggins is going to be a little bit better than that. Like that's
number one draft pick versus undrafted. So
we're gonna get into some draft stuff right after this. I'm gonna do a couple reads here. All right, we'll do Indeed. So even though sports had a break, your business did not. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world because Indeed gets you the best people and fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. So with 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the most important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. So right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job posts, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid due December 31st. All right, now for my favorite. Football is back, although not for my Niners. I got to find something else. Find another team root for, maybe Sam's Raiders. You might not be at a game this year. They're actually pretty good. But you can still be on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spread and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get another season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. head to BetOnline and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Just use the promo code BlueWire at betonline.ag. That's BlueWire, all one word, BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right. Whew, we're back. Seth, how many Warriors rumors have you heard? Oh, sorry.
I was going to say, yeah, we can get into that. who have the Warriors not been linked to in the draft? That's who we need to really concern ourselves with.
No. The dog didn't bark.
Let's start here. Have you been actively getting into the draft weeds, or are you not focused on that as much?
I enjoyed, after having to really know the college players and end up watching a lot of college basketball for the last couple of years, I enjoyed not having to at all this year. I'll say that. I've caught up a little bit, but I wouldn't claim any particular expertise on this class other than at the top. I don't love anybody.
Good. Nice. Yeah, I was going to say, that's perfect. Good thing you didn't watch anything because nobody's worth watching. So
I want to pivot to that then. Yeah. So you worked for the Bucks for a while there, and I know I'm not going to get you to go deep into this, but like, what's the different, what's the team process internally when evaluating these guys? Like, how much time and everything has gone in on the front office side here?
I mean, the players that are being discussed now, for the most part, have been known for 3 years at minimum.
Okay.
So there's, that involves like people have seen them in, Peach Jam or whatever. There's been a lot of stuff that comes up is you're doing, and this wasn't my area, but you're doing background on another player, and he may have been an AU teammate of Anthony Edwards or something like that, and you hear a stray note there, and so you just start to kind of build up a file on all these guys, basically, both from an on floor standpoint, but also this is the part that I think the public isn't as aware of, because people don't talk about it as much, as is kind of the background, character, personality kind of evaluation of these guys that go on. There's a lot of stuff that goes into that. There's some important things you can learn, picking out the important things from the, for lack of a better term, noise can be pretty right. tough. So it's like there's a lot of information there. What of it is relevant and actionable is really where the art and science of it is. And I won't even claim to have any sort of crystal ball as far as that goes.
So I'm just going to read a random quote. So Connor Letourneau, the SF Chronicle, wrote this over the weekend. Warriors are still figuring out where to put Wiseman on their big board, according to multiple league sources. His limited playmaking ability and shooting range could make him an odd fit for the system that asks the center to be an offensive fulcrum. But after watching Wiseman work out in Miami last week, a league source who was present told the Chronicle, he's really physically gifted. Is he worth the second pick? I'm not sure. What I'm trying to get to is, like, clearly the Warriors are trying to smokescreen everyone to not have any feeling for what they're trying to do at this point, because it's advantageous to them from just an asset perspective to be like the wild card, right? My question here is, do you actually believe the Warriors have no clue where they have Wiseman on their big board? Or is all that stuff, like what you're saying, is like, we're assuming they're a competent team? So
I mean, I think no clue is, he's somewhere between 1 and 6 on their board.
Right.
It's just like where you put him on there. I'm sure there's a great degree of internal debate on that, because that's in most years, that's kind of, well, oh, it's, that, that's not true. Half the years, it's pretty obvious.
Right.
Some years it should be pretty obvious when like Luka is there, but a lot of people overthought that. There's some times where it's more muddled. Like, the obvious ones in recent years were, I think, like Ben Simmons and Zion. It's like, okay, right. That's one. And then, and really the way most people have talked about this draft, it seems like, you know, Edwards and LaMelo and Wiseman are kind of right there. And then there's a, you know, some people have raised a couple other names and say, I'm not going to try to pronounce
Avdija.
Thank you.
No, I don't even know if that's right. I'm just saying it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Maybe. But you know, I don't know. But you do end up, you know, you start with kind of a tiers. You say, okay, this is a group, and then we'll argue in this group to see who should go where. And that sort of informs your strategy about, you know, do we want to trade up, trade back, what have you. Like if the fourth and the fifth and third guy on your board are in the same tier, are you going to give much to go from 5 to 3? No. However, if there's a big gap, then you might. So you kind of, you do that at the start to get sort of an idea of the structure of the draft, I guess.
No, that's where the draft questions come in. That's an important point. Yeah. Because if now the Warriors are obviously trying to trade down, I think that's option one for them, but it's unlikely because
I would trade out if you could get a one or two, like, you know, top 5-6 rotation pieces in a draft that is very much a crapshoot at the top end, and your window is this year and next year, and maybe that's all.
Give me a name of a player you'd feel comfortable throwing the number two pick away for.
It's not the number two pick though. It's true. Anthony Edwards with the number two pick salary, which is substantial.
In a lockout season, right?
Yeah.
Well, what is the tier of player that is perhaps then likelier that they can get? Because it's maybe if it's a number two pick where they can get John Morant, yeah, you can get Ben Simmons. maybe Moore would do that. But maybe in this draft, I think it's hard to believe that Moore would do that. So now what does that get you? Now what does that net you in a draft where guys probably feel like Edwards is a top 10 player versus a top two?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that's – first of all, you're hoping for someone who thinks really highly of one of those players, because obviously it's someone who values that spot more than you do. And then, like, who the player is, I don't know. Like, I've – you know, the name I threw out is Covington, and I just don't think that deal's on the table. And
I'd be so curious if the Warriors would do that. I'd be so curious if that were on the table.
Like if you're telling me that you have this team and your goal is to win a championship with this team while
next two years,
I mean, you know.
Whew. Yeah, I mean, objectively, Covington's going to help you win more than Anthony Edwards or Wiseman will in the next 2 years.
Yeah.
I just always have a hard time with the because Covington's an excellent player in his role. I guess maybe I'm risk adverse, but it's like the fear of passing up, I don't know, the next whoever, either of them maybe, just to make a little run at it for like a year and a half. Or maybe I've talked myself into the upside of the pick so much.
Yeah, no, it's the new car.
Right. So the mystery box.
The pick. Always is like, you know, so that's why it's helpful to not talk about it as the second pick. Talk about it as Anthony Edwards. And now how do you feel about it?
Look, we've already talked ourselves into thinking he's the next Oladipo. So you don't, you know, this isn't going to work. We've talked to himself. We think he's the next Oladipo or the Wade.
We just saw an hour-long propaganda workout of him being the next D-Wade. So,
we can talk ourselves into anything.
Plug D-Wade into this team, we're good.
No. Yeah.
Would you rather have Victor Oladipo in 2 years or Robert Covington now, though?
I do get what you're saying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
A better player, but it's just like at that point, it's.
But he might not be a better player until Steph's 35.
Right.
Okay. Now I want to ask this because this I am. So let's say that trade is on the table. I'm not asking if they would do it or not. I'm curious your perspective as someone who. What is people's views on the Warriors front office and how capable they are of scouting and finding talent? Whether it be in the draft or anywhere else. We make fun of Smiley Geach a lot. But I think there are some hesitations, but everybody we ask say we've gone a little too far when we make fun of him.
To piggyback this, undoubtedly, you know, Bob Myers, Joe Lacob have been here the entire run. but a lot of the ancillary key players in the front office, Travis Schlenk, Jerry West, are not there anymore. And, you know, you don't really need Jerry West recruiting for you once you've already got Kevin Durant, Iguodala, all these players. But like now they're in a situation where, like, you know, I'm sure 25 teams in the league would trade their situation to have Steph, Clay, and Draymond under contract. But like they are in kind of a situation where they have to build a roster out around them.
So let's start with the Smiley Geach thing first. no, seriously. Like, I, without having any inside information, what really looks like happened there is, like, and this is something that the teams do a lot at different sort of stages. You find a guy, that's our guy. It's a point of pride. You see this all the time where a team like drafts a guy in the second round who turns out to be, you know, pretty good. And then all of a sudden that guy's untouchable in trade discussions.
Right.
Because he's sort of an avatar of like,
their intelligence,
our awesome process that led us to this guy,
and light years even, yeah,
yeah. And so no, and I don't think that's something that is limited in any way to the Warriors front office. So I think there's a little bit of that's happening there. As far as there, I will say that this is kind of more in my area that I think there was some recognition fairly early in the organization that this was going to be something of a gap year. So they invested more in kind of long-term process-based thinking in sort of in the player identification area, which is, you know, it's scouting, but it's also they've kind of significantly beefed up their analytics effort. And that's the kind of thing that helps you. One of the places it can most help you is finding those extra guys on the margin, whether it's an undrafted free agent, a second rounder, who has a better than average chance of becoming something interesting.
Right. So finding the next Covington.
Yeah, finding the next, exactly. So that's the kind of thing that helps. And it was also, you know, in terms of like player identification and development, when you're going to the finals every year, that kind of, you can't, everything can't be your number one focus. And so that almost naturally is something that takes a backseat. Like no one was like, well, we're in the finals, so we don't have to do that. No one really thinks that way. It's just a natural, you know, division of attention from, you know, the people who are driving decisions and resources. And I think that, you know, having a year off helped them reset a little bit in that area.
Yeah, definitely. So with all that said, you think, you know, if you were Bob Myers, Joe Lacob, and God, your preference would be to trade out of this draft in general if you could get that player. Let's assume you can't. Are you at with their options at number two?
So first of all, I just in terms of trading out, I kind of feel like a team that thinks they're contending should never pick in the first round.
Okay.
They should have already either traded the pick the previous year to add something, or
you either go in or you don't.
Yeah, exactly.
Seth, don't worry. They didn't draft any first round talents in the first round, so it's okay.
I was not a, you know, he's from here, but I was not a Jordan Poole guy.
Oh God.
Yeah.
That's been the other fun propaganda piece where he's been working really hard. Anytime that's the
that is.
I mean, it doesn't instill confidence. But anyway, that's a different podcast.
Yeah. So. You know, you can talk yourself in or out of kind of the top guys, like LaMelo has the highest upside. How does LaMelo work at all with anyone else on the team? Like Edwards, you can sort of talk yourself into as that kind of mid-sized up, like bigger wing, that bigger athletic wing, but then like he's not going to be ready to contribute.
Yeah, he'd be
likely. If you get something out of him in year two that's like playoff level, you've done well. And then, you know, like the size and talent of Wiseman like fills an obvious hole. I'm not a big draft for a fit guy anyway, but there's just, it's none of the three are kind of warp free in terms of
right
how you really feel about them.
The Knicks are the most likely. What do you think about Mitchell Robinson? You would trade for that? You wouldn't even care because it's like I get a player back at least, and I get
I think like Well, I really like Mitchell Robinson. I'm not sure he's that's almost using, you know, that's almost drafting, you know, second
for need
Wiseman. Like, yeah. You know, he is
that's
maybe
good. That's
further
good.
Along, but he's not really quite there yet. So someone who is maybe a little bit more developed.
We're talking guys who are more like 25, 28.
Yeah, like, I don't know. If you're looking at a big guy who, like, a, you know, maybe Miles Turner. Maybe that's a name. Yeah.
That's certainly one we're interested in.
Yeah.
We've had Miles Turner month. We've had Miles Turner months, plural. You know, that's certainly certainly something. But I think Warriors fans wanted to happen. I don't know. The money stuff is a different story that we've gone ad nauseum over. Now, I think what the people do want to hear, Seth, when do you think Giannis announces the trade request? Like, will it be like this offseason, or does he wait till the trade deadline? Like, trade deadline, you know, is tough because he's an MVP, right? He's great.
So I it took a while before I was willing to, you know, even discuss the Bucks at all, just kind of as a matter of of ethics almost. One thing I don't even want to speculate on like what he's going to do, because I don't have any information, and I don't really think it's sort of my place to discuss that at all. So I did, like,
nobody aggregates us, don't worry.
Yeah, well, no, it's not that, it's just I don't like what the hell do I know?
What the hell do we know?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
No, but it would be well, former Bucks exec says, and it's just like, I don't know. Like, I can't make, like, whatever he decides to do, it's cool, because, you know, I'm, you know,
it will be cool.
Yeah. I won't even say that.
Nah, we'll blow by it. You know, I guess the only other thing I have on Giannis is like, is he that genuinely of a good dude? You know, the stuff you see with Steph Curry, it's always like, you know, he's a super nice guy. He never really has any, like, nobody really has anything ever bad to say about him. And I think with Giannis, he gives off kind of the same vibe. Now, KD, you know, too, right, when he was OKC. So that's always, I think, pretty cool as a player. Just with Giannis, you just never hear a bad thing about the guy. He just seems like a genuinely great person.
So this is what I'll say to that is, I think I was very lucky for my first job with a team to be with a team where the players were almost universally like good dudes. And he certainly fits in with that. I mean, there's just a lot of genuinely like thoughtful, good teammate kind of individuals on the squad. Yeah. He like certainly fits like right in among that. So yeah, he's very, you know, he's very devoted to his family. That's the single biggest personality trait that I would discuss about him is
shout out like Fresno, California.
Yeah. His loyalty to his family and the people who've like been with him since the beginning.
No loyalty to the franchise though is what we're betting on here, Seth. So thanks.
We're gonna pivot off this and I'll make you uncomfortable.
Sam always has to cut me off.
Okay, we have some listener questions here. I want to get to these. Let's go here from Danny Burt 33.
Is a good one.
He's asking about how good of a defender do you think Eric Paschal can become? Actually, let's start here. Okay, so the Warriors last year was a miserable year, you know, with injuries and everything. One of the lone bright spots was Eric Paschal. What do you think about him as a player going forward? Because, you know, obviously Warriors are plugging him up as, you know, a future building block piece. And, you know, that's what franchises do anytime they get something good.
So my question, like, sort of what is he?
Right.
No, like just from a game standpoint, like where does he fit in on a good team? Like he seems to me that like he's a really kind of ideal, like his game is very like, I'm the second best player on a mediocre team.
God, that's good. That's really good.
And I like, where does that fit in? You know, because he's not a great shooter. He's not a super athlete. He's not, you know,
a lockdown defender.
Yeah, he's strong, but his strength is also a kind of thing that maybe his lateral movement isn't great, and he's not the most agile. So it's like there's like pieces of different good players in there, but maybe not like for a player who is going to be. Like if he's your eighth man or something, your seventh or eighth man as like a high level.
You sound like player. Andy.
No, I'm not high on Pascal. No, so I'm agree with what he's saying. Yeah.
No, I mean, can he be a rotation player on a, like, is he worse than Torrey Craig? Like, no, he's like, but that's kind of,
I think, whoa, Jesus. Yeah. He's got to be better than that.
No, but that's kind of the area you're aiming for, like, you know, that sort of, you know, like the spectrum from Torrey Craig to Royce O'Neal or something like that. And Royce O'Neal's a pretty good player, but he's a
right. No, that's kind of where I'm at too with him. Like I think his best role is kind of energy scoring off the bench, probably on like a actual winning team. So yeah, now we got the core four and we got an eighth man. Just got to figure out 5, 6, and 7.
Right. And it's nice to have that and have that on a rookie contract, but it's not like
right.
That's not something that you know, that's you finish your team with that. You don't start it.
Yeah, he's also a 41st overall pick. So it's kind of like
getting anything
out of that.
Right, exactly. But this is exactly what I was talking about earlier, where you got a 41st pick. Look what we did. It's good, but it's you know, the perspective of we outperformed that slot. And he's still just he's an eighth man because that's what outperforming that slot looks like.
Right. It's like, well, you also drafted Jordan Poole and Smiley Gage in the same goddamn draft. So I don't know why you're, you know, not you, but I'm saying, like, why would you be fist pumping? You know, it's like, geez, like, you better. I think that's kind of the stuff that we hear is like, Eric Pascal, this guy's like, well, you, I hope you hit on one. Like, you drafted three guys. Like, geez. But
I have, I was going to say, next question. For some reason, two people asked us about Jonas Valanciunas for the traded player exception. I did not know we've reached the multiple Jonas Valanciunas request part of the offseason. Oh. So I don't even know where to go with that. But I guess, Seth, what are your thoughts on his fit with the Warriors?
I like Jonas Valanciunas. He's an odd fit. He would not close games for them. But, like, again, if we're – you know, the money would be that's someone I'd not even considered for them, obviously. Like, right. The money would be weird, but like that aside, like that's sort of as a player, that's kind of what you're talking about in that you know, 25 minute a game starting center who's gonna rebound and finish off duck ins and you know, grab some offensive rebounds and allow Draymond to not have to play center a bunch in the regular season. And he's, you know, he's almost like a deluxe version of that.
Yeah. He is. They always need that Zaza, or in this case, a much better version of Zaza.
Zaza who can catch the ball. Yeah.
And, I mean, Jonas shoots threes now. You know, he shoots threes. I got a question, a personal question, because I'm very curious about this. From you work with analytics. You work with numbers. You know, like 2 + 2, 3 + 3. You know, 3 > 2. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious how much – I'm sure there are certain organizations with players that are willing to listen more to that, whether that be organizations with younger players or not versus kind of like star players. I don't know. Are organizations more successful offensively, defensively, when they have players that do listen to more? Or actually, and even coaches.
I don't think it's a one-to-one relationship. I think that you can get to a lot of the same places, kind of more quote-unquote traditional basketball knowledge than that kind of the metrics and statistical based reasoning gets you. Mm. You know, for a long time, like, you know, Greg Popovich played a very analytics friendly style, while not him not being a great, you know, subscriber to the methodology himself.
Right.
And there's a lot of coaches who kind of like Mike D'Antoni was not like crunching spreadsheets when he came up with 7 seconds or less, but they hit on some things that work, that whether it's something that was discovered through kind of quote unquote analytics or confirmed by that, it was still like, it was something that was effective for, you know, for both basketball and mathematical reasons, I'd say. So in terms of direct, like player does analytics, that's like, you know, it's one step removed from that, because really you want players can't be thinking. And so there's a combination of building habits that are analytically driven, but also putting them in positions where their already developed skill and feel for the game will lead them to do things that are that are kind of plus EV from a statistical standpoint. So it's a little bit. Baseball is a sport where it is much easier to kind of directly get with the player, because baseball's always been about like the numbers and the adjustments, and you get in, you tinker with your swing to do this and that.
Sometimes and now you take a guy out too early, you know. Sometimes you take a guy out in game six.
Yeah. I was going to actually, it's hilarious Andy asked that, because I was about to pull up some questions from our Discord chat, which is premium members only. There's actually three questions here which kind of dance around what you guys were just talking about. So I just want to bring it up.
Sure.
They're so excited for Seth, by the way. These guys
We'd be doing a disservice, and naturally they had to listen through an hour of podcast to get to their questions. So we apologize for that, guys. But okay, curious what he thinks are still a blind spot with analytics. And the second question here, someone's bringing up the fact that like how block and steal rate is a reliable measure for drafting. And finally brings it to this point where, let's see, the difference between like Clay's defensive rating by stats and actually watching his defense versus how he's rated by other players. Curious examples of what Seth sees as kind of the best trends for scouting and stuff that might still be undervalued in terms of scouting with analytics.
That's a lot of really good questions. Let me take the easy one first. That's the steal and block rate. That's something that has tended to be a good indicator. Why is sort of an open question. I've always thought it was it helped identify players with functional athleticism. And that's a combination of kind of the run jump athleticism, but also the sort of game reading feel athleticism that just allow, you know, if a player is able to get blocks and steals, especially a perimeter player, that means that they are seeing things develop early enough and then they have the physical wherewithal to make a play on the ball. Those are the kind of things that tend to actually translate almost as much to offense, if not more, than to defense, because again, it's showing a little bit of that, you know, that translation of identification of a situation on the floor translated into action you can actually perform. People call it I don't like basketball IQ as a term. I've really kind of settled on using feel. I think that's sort of what it's picking up on. It's like, can you play basketball? Is really what we're talking about.
Can you play at the speed you need to play at?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's can you make those decisions in the moment? And then are you like decisions that you're physically capable of following through on? And I think that leads to what is the trend that we're looking for. I think we're trying to like, that's the thing that, you know, I think the smart draft people on Twitter, the better scouts, that's what they're looking at. They're not looking at tools so much. They're looking at, you know, decision making, like, and I'm not talking about decision making like what passes you're making,
right?
Like when to stunt and recover on a closeout, like when to, you know, how to hold an extra dribble to make the man come off the corner to make the pass. All those little things that, like, you know, the best example in the NBA is, you know, Chris Paul, little things he does to manipulate the game and obviously you're not finding that in a college player.
Right.
But guys who are along that spectrum, can he play? Can he make decisions? Can he fit in with other players? Or does it have to be paint by numbers? And that's the thing that, like, you can have a functional, decent player who paints by numbers. But for a really high-end player, you need that sort of inspiration of recognizing, okay, here's what the system calls for me to do, but I'm going to deviate from it because X, Y, and Z. And even if he can't kind of verbalize that thought process, him being able to in real time process that and do that on the court, that's what you're looking for. And that's somewhere between a quantitative and a qualitative judgment, but that's really where it's at.
I guess if you're looking at it from this draft perspective, you almost are like, well, maybe LaMelo, if you're talking about top tier players, has that. And then beyond that, you're really looking at like, yeah, Halliburton has great feel for the game, but yeah, is he going to be more than immediate, right?
Or we can go with the only player the Warriors haven't leaked that they like, Isaac Okoro, who probably is defined most by his feel and defense than anything. Like, I mean, he's not wowing you with the 29% three-point shooting.
Yeah. Jesus Christ. Perfect fit for a Warriors role player.
I mean, I think a guy who, Kira Lewis is a guy who some people I respect seem to like. I can't claim to have dug deep on these guys, but that's just the people who I respect have kind of dug deep on him and showed some things that I found intriguing. It's obviously he's not, you're not taking him with a second pick.
But sure.
Yeah. But I think that's that sort of interaction between, what are some statistical indicators of that feel versus what are you looking at on the court? So you're not seeing a guy who's just like compiling stats at a college level, but the stats that he's compiling are evidence of that kind of,
right,
the figured out factor. Like I was all in on Grant Williams being, despite being kind of short and round, like him being a good player is because like he had that figured out factor that was both evident in his statistical production and just watching him play.
You probably figure that out because I think he's compared most to or not most, but he's compared sometimes to Draymond Green. And I think if you're talking about the great Warriors teams of the KD, Steph, those guys, like I think the top two field guys on that team was probably Draymond and Iguodala. Like probably the two guys that were not the best, right? Like players on the team would probably be Steph, Clay, and KD, but well, maybe they're more known for being few, but to me, they always felt like those two guys that were at the top on that team.
I mean, I think that's selling Clay short a little bit from a field perspective, to be honest.
Wow.
I think, yeah.
Ooh, go on.
No, his ability to move like off the ball on both ends of the floor is, you asked about his defense, and something that I've always been really impressed by him is he's one of the better players in the league at defending like scores off the ball. In terms of, it wasn't maybe as much 2 years ago because, you've been to the finals four straight years, so who cares? On a Tuesday night in December, like, who gives a crap? And that was kind of evident in some of his and other players' numbers. But kind of you watch guys navigate screens. And this was something that happened in the finals a lot. Like when Duncan Robinson was able to get open, it's because he was able to subtly, like, push his defender into a space where they couldn't get around a screen. They had to run through a screen. And on the flip side, defensively, Clay is very good at kind of hitting first so that he gives himself a path to get through those. And that's always something I've been very...
I mean, he should. He's a master of doing all that stuff on offense. He should know all the tricks of the trade on the other end.
But like, that's a lot of times the guys who are good at it on offense are less inclined to do it on, like, Reggie Miller could do all of it on defense and not so much on offense and not so much on defense.
Let's end on this question then. Okay. We talked about Steph and Clay in your tiers, we talked about Steph and Draymond in your tiers series. Let's talk about Clay real quick.
Yeah.
He's coming off of an ACL tear, although it might have been 20 years ago at this point. I mean, I'm losing track of time.
Yeah.
What is a realistic expectation for him next year, and where do you think he'll be?
That's a weird question. Clay has always been one of the hardest guys to rate. He's from a metric standpoint, he's always been sort of mediocre.
Right.
And I think but that's,
it turns Warrior fans into like becoming anti-stat zealots.
But it's also, it goes deep in that because it's explainable in that, a lot of those stats are contextual and it's just like, well, that in some ways is showing he's just not as good as Steph, which, oh no. Like, so that makes him look worse than he is. And there's also, because there's so much talent and has always been so much talent on his teams, that he has had more kind of latent ability to expand his game than most players in his role. Right. And I think that that's something that, like, it's hard to really quantify this, but, you know, you see it in you know, there's very occasionally just the incandescent performance where he's, you know, right. He's got 47 and on six
dribbles.
Yeah, and six dribbles, and he's had the ball for 15 seconds. And they've needed every point, and without that, they get knocked out of the playoffs.
Right.
You know, no, so that's it's tough to balance. And he's, you know, from a defensive standpoint, some metrics don't love him because he doesn't get steals and blocks and rebounds. But at the same time,
he is kind of the anecdote or the opposite to kind of block and steal rates are great.
Yeah.
Way to kind of.
But if you look at metrics that don't include those, he generally shows up as pretty good, not like elite all defensive level, but pretty good. Mm-hmm. And especially for a guy who has a sizable offensive role,
right?
Pretty good. So I think that on balance, I've always liked him more than the raw numbers would show. Now, counterpoint, age plus ACL, what does that look like? And you have kind of a mini version of the KD shrug about what he looks like in this coming season.
Yeah, that's at least it's not the Achilles, which I guess is a little bit worse. That is the problem with analytics. That's not a problem with analytics. That's the problem with people trying to understand analytics is that you see a number, then you don't really understand or try to understand where the number is coming from. Then you just kind of base your opinion of whether it's good or not off of that.
It's my favorite Warriors Twitter thing where everyone posts all the numbers that show Steph as being one of the two best players the last decade. But then in the following post, we'll tell you that, you know, you can't look at the stats when you're discussing Clay.
Yeah,
right. So. No, if there's one thing that I hope is came from the Tears Project to begin with is that, like, player value, production, whatever, is heavily dependent on circumstances. And that's no different for a lot of these stats. These stats aren't a measure of player goodness. They're a measure of... They're an attempt to measure effectiveness in role.
Right.
So they don't necessarily tell you anything about what the player would do in a different role. So, Clay, you have strong evidence that if you gave him a bigger role, he would do just fine. But because you have, you know, Steph Curry and Draymond gets to handle the ball and stuff like that, he's, you know, the third or fourth option on offense a lot of times.
God, we will never get to Draymond. I don't know if we should we get Draymond. Should we do 2 minutes on Draymond, Sam? We'll do 2 minutes on Draymond. We're not optimistic on Draymond Green, Seth. We're gonna give you 60 seconds.
Just everything to avoid going to CNN.
Oh yeah, 120 seconds.
Okay, so Draymond's metrics were terrible last year. Like, there's no way around that. Who cares? Like, he's a guy who is an ultimate, like, ceiling raiser around other good players, and he's playing with Jordan Poole and Alan Smiley each. So who cares? He's just played in five straight finals.
Don't forget Marquise Chris.
Yeah. But so, you know, the fact that if he had just not played last year, you know, everyone would think
more. He broke his hand too. Yeah.
Yeah. If he just sat out and like, he took a gap year. He just was on the court for some of it.
The clutch gets to the people. But, Seth, we have taken up too much of your time. We appreciate you coming on, man. That was great.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Appreciate it, Seth. It's been great.